This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Opposition supporters are seeking safe areas to protest as Cameroon security forces have been cracking down on street rallies since the election.
That's Moki Edwin Kenzeka reporting from Yaoundé. Details next. Also, the death toll from the Ebola outbreak in the DRC has risen to 170. Suspected Islamic State militants killed at least four people in a small town in central Libya. And Kenya's Airways direct flight to the United States landed this morning at New York's JFK Airport. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, security forces in Cameroon have been cracking down on street rallies protesting the October 7th re-election of President Paul Biya. To avoid beatings and arrest, protesters have taken their message to safer, even holy grounds such as schools and churches. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Opposition protesters sang on Monday in front of the University of Yaoundé in the capital of Cameroon. The lyrics say that opposition leader Maurice Kamto won the October 7 presidential election and that longtime president Paul Biya should hand over power. A massive deployment of police stopped the protesters from singing on the campus itself. 26-year-old teacher Boniface Onana says they will continue demonstrating against Biya's re-election. He says Biya should know that the time he was ruling Cameroon with an iron fist, using divide and conquer tactics, is over. Onana says Cameroonians should know that a new nation with a new leader has been born, and he will do everything possible to pass on the message. Police say they detained four of the protesters and are investigating others who ran onto the university grounds disguised as students. Opposition supporters are seeking safe areas to protest as Cameroon security forces have been cracking down on street rallies since the election. Tens of protesters on Sunday entered the Our Lady of Victory's Cathedral in Yaoundé, interrupting a service to sing that Biya should hand over power. Sustain Liport is the information officer for Kamto's Cameroon Renaissance Movement Party. He says they took their protest to the university and the church because of the crackdown.
Il y a deux guerres que lui-même a déclarées et aucune n'est encore achevée. Maurice Kamto a fait la promesse.
He says the military should know that Biya has not even won wars. He declared on two fronts, against Boko Haram and against separatists, fighting for the creation of an English-speaking state. Yet, he is sending his military to attack innocent people who are simply protesting for their rights. Archbishop Jean Barga condemned the protesters who entered the church, calling it a desecration of the religious body.
L'archidiocèse de Yaoundé exprime par ma voix sa profonde indignation.
He says the Yaoundé Archdiocese is scandalized at the disrespect that some politicians have shown towards the church. He says the church is apolitical and should never be used for any political activity, reason why he totally condemns such acts that are instilling doubt in the minds of Christians as to the neutrality of the Catholic Church. The Roman Catholic Church in Cameroon has issued conflicting comments on the presidential election. Mbarga on Sunday saluted Biya as the winner, while the head of the National Catholic Bishops' Conference expressed suspicion at the official results. Officials said Biya won the election with 71% of the vote. Kamto, his main challenger, received 14%. Opposition parties accused Biya's ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement, CPDM party, of massive electoral fraud. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Suspected Islamic State militants killed at least 4 people in a small town in central Libya. Military officials today say the attack on Al-Foga lasted several hours yesterday, and it appears the fighters kidnapped at least 10 civilians before they retreated. The town has been under the control of the Libyan National Army, which is led by General Khalifa Haftar. The LNA controls much of the eastern Libya, and the Government of National Accord controls the rest. All sides are to meet in Italy in mid-November to work toward ending the country's long political crisis. Zimbabwe's capital, Harare, has been working to install surveillance cameras in the central business district. Citizens have mixed feelings over the move, with many saying the council has other projects that needs to take priority. Reporter Kudzai Zenawashi has more.
City Council spokesperson Michael Chideme says the camera project will improve the city for drivers and others.
We are working together with City Parking, a 100% City of Harare-owned company that has come in to reinvest the money that it is generating from Harare residents, mostly the motorists, back onto the roads to make our roads trafficable, to do road markings in the CBD. They are using a very interesting paint which illuminates at night, and then they are also going to put cameras at all road intersections in the CBD.
The project is expected to cost $2 million. Chideme says part of the program is already done.
The backroom infrastructure is already running. So what is now left is the practical installation of the cameras on the streets.
He adds that he doesn't have set timelines. The cameras will be fully functional soon as the projects fall within the mayor's 100-day targets in office. Harare resident Tinotenda Sigauke says the council could have focused on other major issues.
We recently got out of the cholera issue, and still the issues of provision of water is still an issue in some areas. There's a chance of cholera coming up again. So for them to be focusing on CCTV when there are many other important issues out there, I think it's a case of misplaced priorities.
Last month, the city reported more than 3,000 suspected cholera cases and at least 30 cholera deaths. The poor sanitation and water supply system has been blamed on a number of outbreaks over the past decade. Sigauke's sentiments have been widely expressed on the council's social media platforms, but Chideme says the city is justified to focus on cameras.
They can say all that, but these are things that a modern city requires. It has become a trend in Harare that whatever the city decides to do, people will say something else. Had we started doing something else, people would say, why didn't they start with the street cameras? People need to begin to appreciate that the city has to go forward. The city has to be modern.
Chideme says the cameras will help reduce traffic offenses, robberies, theft, and help in car accident disputes. The city government also thinks the cameras will help it collect more revenue since they can identify drivers who commit violations, allowing the government to charge them fines. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zenawashi from Harare.
The death toll from the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo has risen to 170 as security concerns continue to constrain the international effort to bring it under control. The number of confirmed and suspected cases is now 267. A series of attacks have hampered aid workers in their efforts to treat people who have contracted the deadly virus and track down and vaccinate people people they have come in contact with. The attacks have been followed by periods of mourning and violent protests that have forced healthcare staffers to stay indoors. The affected area is in a conflict zone where more than 100 armed groups are active. There are concerns that the outbreak could spread to neighboring countries, which have set up monitoring systems for people crossing over from the DRC. With the continuing violence in Syria, the brutality of Boko Haram in Nigeria, and now the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi in the Saudi embassy of Istanbul, the world seems to have forgotten the people of the Nuba Mountains, where for 7 years Sudan President Omar al-Bashir has waged war on his own people. Carol Van Dam attended the screening of a film about the plight of the Nuba people and has this report from Washington.
Nearly every other day, Russian-made Antonov planes bombed unarmed civilians, severed limbs and crushed torsos, burned small houses, and burned crops that would have fed the Nuba people. Many humanitarians and international aid groups left the mountains years ago, but one doctor has stayed. Dr. Tom Katina of New York is surgeon, OBGYN, and pediatrician at the Mother of Mercy Hospital, the only hospital for miles around. And so Dr. Katina does what he can to save the lives of hundreds of men, women, and children caught up in the battle between President Bashir and the Sudan People's Liberation Movement North rebel fighters. Dr. Katina wouldn't be known to the world were it not for his close friend from college, filmmaker Ken Carlson.
I found out that he was in great need in the Nuba Mountains 5-6 years ago, and found out that he was in desperate need of aid, and decided to reach out to him, and we were able to put $102,000 together and put a truck with supplies and vaccines and send it up to him just in time.
Carlson, a nominee for the Grand Jury Prize at the Sundance Film Festival, says he was drawn to find out for himself why his friend was so passionately committed to the people of the Nuba Mountains. Dr. Katina awakens at 5:50 without an alarm each morning, marches to the chapel where he says a rosary, then drinks tea, then walks straight to the hospital for another long day. In one scene, Dr. Katina sees a man who has just had his nose blown off by shrapnel.
He's furious. He's furious that these innocent human lives are being destroyed, and families are being splintered for no reason.
The Heart of Nuba screening at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. drew dozens of donors, activists, and diaspora to the storied Gothic building last weekend. Nathaniel Nyok, a lost boy from South Sudan who ran barefoot for 5 days to escape the fighting in his hometown of Bor, says one part of the film gave him chills.
Seeing the kids running from the Antonov, and then jumping into that one hole to hide. That's what I used to do.
Nasima, a Sudanese nurse who works alongside her husband, Dr. Katina, in the Nuba Mountains, describes what it's like to be in the operating theater when you come under attack by your own government.
No one comes out, but in the wards, people always run to the first hole. People run to the first hole with patients who are able to go. Who are able to run.
In January, President Bashir signed a 4-month ceasefire with the SPLM North rebels, but ground attacks continue in the area. The ICC charged Bashir with war crimes and crimes against humanity years ago, but he has eluded arrest. It is said that Bashir doesn't care about the Nuba people, but he does care about what lies underneath them, oil and minerals. Carlson is raising donations for the Mother of Mercy Hospital by making this documentary. For VOA News, I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
Nineteen past the hour, you were listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Hundreds of South Sudan army soldiers cleaned the streets of Juba on Saturday ahead of Wednesday's celebrations for the signed revitalized peace agreement. The exercise coincided with a civil society monthly campaign called Don't Just Be Youthful, Be Useful. Winnie Serino reports from Juba.
Hundreds of soldiers clad in military uniforms pulled on gloves and face masks as they cleaned the streets of the capital. Instead of guns, they carried slashes, hoes, pangas and polythene bags for collecting trash around the airport, Juba Teaching Hospital and Juba Town. About 200 youth activists joined the soldiers in cleaning up areas around Freedom Hospital and Yakran Market. The teams were accompanied by a musical van to the John Garang Mausoleum. Major General Majir Deng led the soldiers in the effort to spruce up Juba streets before Wednesday's big event.
These are the dividends of peace. When there is peace, the army is always to work for the people. I know they have done their job when they were fighting for the liberation of the country, but their liberation cannot be sustained unless there is work with it. And this is what we are doing. And I think if the city council is ready, we are ready each Saturday to see into it that we work on this, because this is where nationalism is started.
Wani Michael, Executive Director for the National Youth Organization, OK Africa Foundation, says civil society groups are also running a monthly campaign called Nadafa Lebedna, which in Arabic means cleaning our country. Michael says the campaign was in place long before this week's celebrations were scheduled.
We had planned earlier, but we also used the opportunity to celebrate the signing of the peace of the peace agreement, because it's still too early for me to celebrate peace, because I don't see any tangible implementation yet. We are not in the presidential period, so I will be celebrating only the signing of the agreement. But I'm not celebrating peace, because I have not seen yet the real peace.
Wani is calling on South Sudan's leaders to fully implement the peace agreement they signed last month without delay. Youth activist Kiden Zaida says she's helping to clean Juba streets as an example for other youth to keep the surrounding environment clean. And Zaida says she's happy to team up with soldiers.
We don't do that usually in South Sudan. So this is going to act as a bridge. People will realize that actually we can be friends with the soldiers. Apart from them going to the war, they can also participate in cleaning the environment. Apart from holding the gun and terrorizing people on the streets, we can actually work together to build the nation.
Emmanuel Tongun, director of the Dr. Phillips Pharmaceutical Company of Juba, says the company donated 3 cartons of gloves, 40 packets of face masks, and 10 rolls of plastic bags to collect garbage.
We're just giving back to the community, so there's no motive at all. We've been involved with the civil society since they started their program with the Nadafa Beledna, and we started off with the same donations because we know very well they're keeping up, doing their best to clean up the city with limited funding, so we've given them that extra boost.
Tongun praised youth activists who are helping to clean up the capital and says he hopes the campaign will be extended to other towns. Joseph Africano, Undersecretary in the Environment and Forestry Ministry, says his ministry will work with the Juba City Council to make South Sudan's capital one of the cleanest cities in Africa.
We would like to celebrate this peace while our city is clean. It's not going to be a one-time event, and the Ministry of Environment will be making sure that we collaborate with the City Council to see that South Sudan or Juba becomes one of the cleanest cities in Africa. We have to beat Kigali or Rwanda.
The cleanup exercise was a joint campaign between civil society groups, the Ministry of Defense, and the Juba City Council. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
The first Kenya Airways direct flight to the United States landed this morning at New York's JFK Airport. Flight KQ002 was greeted with a traditional water cannon blast for inaugural flights. The Boeing Dreamliner jet carried 234 passengers, including Kenyan Foreign Affairs Cabinet Secretary Monica Juma, Kenya's Airways Chief Executive Sebastian Mikosi, and the U.S. Ambassador to Kenya, Robert Godek. The first direct flight took about 14 hours, compared with 22 hours for trips that require refueling, stops, or changing planes. The airline sees the direct flight as key to expanding access to the U.S. market. It is part of Kenya's drive to expand tourism and business links with American companies. Spain this year overtakes Italy as the top destination for migrants heading to Europe. The Spanish enclaves of Ceuta and Malila sit on the northern tip of Morocco and have attracted migrants for centuries. This year, there has been a sharp increase in the numbers trying to breach the border fences, while several thousand migrants sleep in the forests on the Moroccan side of the border, waiting for their chance to cross. Henry Ridgewell reports from Ceuta on the dilemma facing Spanish authorities, as pressure builds on the furthest frontiers of Europe.
Early on July 26 this year, more than 600 migrants celebrate as they break through the border fence into the Spanish enclave of Ceuta, chanting Bossa, or victory. For them, it is a major step toward their goal of reaching mainland Europe, the beginning of the end of an often brutal odyssey across Africa. The incident was one of several recent mass breaches of the frontiers in Ceuta and Melilla. Alfonso Cruzado works for the Spanish Civil Guard, tasked with securing the frontier. He says the July assault is the latest example of increasing violence.
Hay que tener en cuenta que en estas ocasiones, sobre todo en estos dos últimos casos que estamos hablando,
he says the migrants used tools like angle irons, shears and mallets. They burst through and then they threw caustic soda, acid and homemade flamethrowers to prevent us from getting near. Despite the pressures on the frontier, Spain's government wants to remove the razor wire as it often causes horrific injuries to migrants and replace it with so-called smart sensors. That is not a smart idea, argues Fatima Mohamed Dos Santos, who represents Ceuta for the opposition People's Party in the Spanish Senate.
Claro, yo creo que eso también, ese tipo de llamadas,
she says it is like making an advertisement that the fence will be permeable. Most of the immigrants come here for economic reasons, she says, adding that the people smuggling criminal gangs exploit the message that they can find a better life. It is a message that has driven 18-year-old Mamadou Camara thousands of miles from his home in the Guinean capital, Conakry, to reach Ceuta. It has taken him 2 years, including a year living in the forest in Morocco. He was among the 600 migrants who broke through in July. To make it into Ceuta, he says, it is only God who can decide that, because with the rush at the fence, it is only God's spirit that can control what happens. You understand? That was how it happened. I made it over and arrived here. Camara spends much of the day at the San Antonio Day Center for Migrants. It offers Spanish lessons, games and computers, a chance to chat online with family back home. Many of the migrants here are teenagers who travelled alone. Ceuta is a final stepping stone on their journey to Europe. The migrants must wait in turn, sometimes for a year or more, to be taken to the Spanish mainland, to a future as yet unknown. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News in the Spanish enclave of Ceuta.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports, coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Patrick Dea, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
I'm Linor Moudou, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will have an exclusive interview with Dr. Helena Ndube, Namibian ophthalmologist notable for her charitable work among sufferers of eye-related illnesses in Namibia. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Africa.